Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at internetadvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at internetadvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome again to the Internet Advisor and to a jam-packed program. As always, we are loaded for bear with lots of good information for you. In particular today, our focus will be on helping the blind to see in the sense of being on the Internet and navigating it. Our host will be Ted Lennox, who's with me today, along with a whole bunch of other people he's brought along to talk about something called Braille Note. An interesting program. Stay tuned because we've got lots of good information for you. Well, once again, welcome to our program, and today we have in studio with me Mr. Ed Rudell and Cal Carson. Hi, guys. How you doing?
It's a blustery day.
Can you believe it? After the boiling hot March that we had, in some days at least, or it was up in the 80s, I think close to 90, We've got this frigid weather now.
Yep. But I was out with the Boy Scouts today, and we were out planting trees, and it was fun. It was a good day. What about you, Cal?
Well, let's see. I got to cut my grass, so I got to go over to my buddy's house. He's got a tractor over there. I'm going to borrow to do that with.
It's gotten that high, huh?
Yeah, a little bit of hay in the backyard.
I was going to say, do you bale it?
Only on weekends.
Well, guys, let's take a look at some of the hot highlights before we get to introducing our guest in a very special program that we have today. The highlights for the week, I think, probably was... Clouds, and more clouds.
But not for Google, because they've introduced their Google Drive, which is offering free 5 gigabytes of drive storage or network cloud storage for Android devices, but not yet for the iPhone. You can for Microsoft, but not for the Mac devices yet.
Oh, really?
I'm going to stick with Dropbox. I've been very happy with it, and it works well.
Well, the thing is, though, when they first introduced it, they offered 5 gigabyte, and Dropbox was only 2 gigabyte at the time.
I think it was three. I should take a look.
And, well, they've now matched Google gigabyte for gigabyte, and it's now 5 gigabyte.
And they also did something on Dropbox I was just looking at today, that they have now, to share a folder on Dropbox, you don't have to go through a lot of the convoluted things you used to have to. It's very simple, and all you send somebody a web address, and boom, they can share it. Now they're competing with the big boys. I mean, with YouSendIt, which was for sending very large files, and it's become really quite competitive.
I think it's still limited to around 500 gigabytes for single file sizes, but you know, and not to leave Microsoft out of this, but their SkyDrive product out there, they're still offering 7 gigabytes of free storage for its users.
Seven?
That's what I'm reading.
Wow.
Can anybody use it, or do you have to be a Windows user to use it?
Well, that I don't know yet. I'm not a SkyDrive user. Well, you know, I just don't have that much information. I'm not as mobile as I used to be. I go to the same location every day. When I was mobile and working at home and going to many people's homes to work on their PCs and stuff, you know what I would stuff out there? I'd be stuffing antivirus, anti-spyware.
Sure. All of your stuff.
All my free toolkits. Right. I would keep them up to date out there. I just don't do that as much as I used to.
This would be helpful for a lot of our listeners. We've had calls from people who are like traveling salespersons and things like that, who need to be able to take things from their sales offices forever and documents and things like that, take them with them.
Yeah.
And it is a really handy way of taking something.
Oh, yeah. And the other side to it is, it's like whenever I would have to do, for example, I occasionally will do presentations, multimedia presentations for different groups and stuff like that. If that presentation will fit on my Dropbox Drive or my Google Drive, something like that, I always put a copy of it out there as well as the copy that I have on the computer that I'm taking with me, because if it just goes skunk on you and your hard drive dies, you can just pull it right down, grab another computer, and you're up and ready to go.
Right. The only thing I would be concerned about is the privacy issues. You know, Google makes their money as advertisement.
Yes.
Right? And you really read through their I didn't get a chance to read through the entire article. And they were actually, if you ever read that their
disclaimer,
license agreement, disclaimer, it's like they can do almost anything they want with your data, you know, basically. So it's whether or not they, you know, if you put your photos out there, they have the right to be able to massage and manipulate those and catalog.
And to use them.
Yeah.
That's the reason why I think with Dropbox, once you start paying for it,
yes,
then all those rules go away.
Oh.
As long as you pay for it. Now, if you do the freebie, I think you have, I don't know if they sell a bunch of their stuff or anything like that, but you know, it seems like they're a lot more quieter than some of the other places. I've been
using it to share photos. Like we go to a family picture, like Easter.
Yeah.
There are a whole bunch of people taking pictures, and not everybody, for instance, is on the Mac platform, iOS platform. So I can put all of them up there on the Dropbox, and then everybody can go up and pick the files out they want, pick the pictures they want.
Now, what is that, Flickr or that's Dropbox?
Dropbox. Yes. Dropbox.
Which goes back to the old saying, there's no free lunch. Mm-hmm. Everything comes with a price.
Now, who was the company that Facebook purchased last week? What was the photo sharing one?
Instagram.
Yeah, now... I could see that expanding very easily, and I could see Facebook expanding into a cloud-based storage very easily in the near future.
I think, and the little note, if you go to our homepage, I put this under a news item about Google Drive joining the battle of the clouds, that this is a good time for everybody to get in there and get a whole bunch of free storage on any number of different places. But it's a good time, because eventually this is going to all settle out. And you're going to be getting some competition for this. But just quickly, but one of the advantages, I guess, of the Google Drive is it's connected to Google Docs, which they help will be their advantage, that you can create something in Google Docs, for instance, and you can share projects and things like that, or store them, I should say. You know,
I'm getting old. I'm going to admit I'm getting old. I don't want all my stuff connected. I want to be able to connect what I want to connect, and what I don't want to connect, I don't want to connect.
Yeah. Right. You know, the one thing I'll say about Google Docs, though, I mean, I've been a Microsoft user for years, you know, and I really like their Office suite of applications, but I bet you I don't touch 2% of the capabilities of Microsoft Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
That's true.
Where Google Docs, that does everything I would want to do.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? Because I tell you, I could probably go and load a copy of Word for Windows 95, and it'll probably still have more bells and whistles in it than I'll ever use in a word processing program.
And that's where Google's going. If Google provides the space out there and introduces people, and I read this in one of the articles on CNET, and it makes perfect sense. If they provide the space, they have users start to store the data out there, and then they're going to realize, well, Google, when they double-click on it, it may auto-launch Google Docs, and people are going, what do I need Microsoft Office for? Or 360?
That's going to be the question people will be asking. Hey, guys, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with one of the people in the studio here who's been a guest with us probably more times than anybody else except Lauren Baker, Gary's daughter. Ted Lennox will be with us in just a moment to introduce this special program about the blind seeing online with a whole host of guests. So please do stay tuned for a special program. To introduce our segment of the program today, this hour really, let me plagiarize a little bit from what I wrote on our homepage, because it's true that for years, the window on the world for the blind and visually impaired has been radio. And WJR has in particular been a special friend for generations of people who are visually challenged, etc. And during this first hour, we're going to dedicate our program to those listeners. And there's lots of those listeners who have joined us on the air with their questions and comments as well. And one of the persons who introduced us, I think, in many ways initially to this whole group of listeners that we had out there was a man named Ted Lennox, who began with us way back when, the very first year that we were on the air. Ted Lennox, you were a guest with us, and welcome once again.
Yeah. It's a joy to be here, I'll tell you that.
Oh, that's fantastic. Why did you call us the first time? I have forgotten what it was. I know we cost you some money.
Yes, you did, because I called you and wanted advice on buying things. And actually, the show was only on between 8:30 and 9.
That's right.
And Gary Baker said, let me call you back after the show's off so we can talk. And anyway, it cost me back in those computers cost a lot of money. Back in those days, I think I spent something like $1,500 or something. So it cost me quite a bit of money.
Mrs. Lennox, is she in the audience here? We're not in trouble then.
No. No, we're going to talk about her, though.
We are. Good, good. And today, let's help folks understand the breadth of what we're going to be talking about today, Ted. So we're going to be handling a lot of different things. Let's talk about some of the people who are going to be on with us and the things we're going to talk about.
Okay, you want to do that?
Or you go ahead and tell us about some of the people who are going to be visiting
us. First of all, as soon as I get done, I think Jerry... And you pronounce his name,
Weichbrot.
Very good. And I won't tell you too much because he can tell you about himself, but he's been using a Braille note now for quite a while, and he uses it both at work and at home, and he'll tell you all about that.
Basically, a Braille note, which both of you, Jerry, welcome to the program as well, by the way.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, Jerry, you're an engineer at GM, right?
I am.
At the test track. And the devices that you have in front of you, basically, folks, look like a small laptop without a screen. But they have a Braille keyboard in front of it. Am I right then, Jerry? Is that what you're touching with your fingers there?
Yeah, there's a Braille keyboard and there's a Braille display as well.
Okay, it's a Braille display. And this allows you then to input information, Ted, for instance, to surf the web?
Yep, we can do send emails, receive emails. In fact, all the emails which you so kindly sent to me in the last 3 weeks or so, I read with my Braille note.
That's wonderful. And, now, can you also surf the internet with it? And how do you do that?
Yeah, well, first of all, the Braille note, you can use speech and Braille or both. And I usually use Braille, and I think everybody here that's going to be on the show are pretty much Braille people. Because, mm-hmm. you know, Braille to me is what print is to you.
Explain just kind of quickly what Braille is for people who may not know what it is.
Well, it's interesting. Have you read my notes?
I'm trying to follow them.
I'm impressed. Well, I'm going to just briefly step back and tell you, because I like history. And back in the early 1800s, a guy named Captain Barbier invented a system of communicating with soldiers at night when it was dark. And he made a 12-dot Braille communications program. And it just didn't work because they didn't have time to teach the soldiers and all that sort of thing. But this is so interesting. In 1823, I guess he thought there was some value here. He went to the School for the Blind in Paris, France, and showed them his system, a 12-dot system. And this young kid, 14-year-old Louis Braille, got interested, and he reduced the Braille down to 6 dots. And now that started in 1823 when he was 14.
Oh my goodness.
We're using the same 6-dot system, and I wish I had time to get into it.
But that's fascinating.
I mean, to me, it's amazing. Yeah. And here I am now. I am on the internet doing research. I am sending and receiving email. I'm writing documents and so forth.
Astounding. And it began in a military setting, but then a 14-year-old boy took it and cut it in half and made it much more efficient that way. Now, Jerry, as an engineer at GM and in your own home life, how do you use the Braille note?
I use the Braille note for a whole mess of things. For one thing, I use it a lot for the sorts of things that you would use a pencil and paper for. I think on paper, except that I think on the Braille note. I do a lot of software development, and when I'm trying to put together my ideas for how something should work, what the logic should be of it, I will sit there and sort of commune with my own brain by writing things down, working out what the steps should be.
In Braille.
Before I begin in Braille.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I can go back and read through it and say, okay, so here's the first step. How am I going to accomplish this in lines of source code?
You know, that's just fascinating because most of us, when we do handwritten notes and we have vision, we use circles and squares and we put notes in there and then we draw arrows.
So it's like flowcharting.
Flowcharting. Yeah. Yeah. And I just could not imagine doing that on a Braille system. You must have, you have to do a lot of forethought before then. You have to have it all figured out in your brain beforehand.
But you actually, it sounds like you compose with it as you're doing the Braille, Jerry.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, do you write code with Braille? Can you write code with Braille? You know, the code for computer, software?
You can. I haven't really used the Braille note much as an input and output device with the computer.
Mm-hmm.
You can attach it together with a USB cable or using Bluetooth and use it to augment your computer. But I tend to use the Braille note separately, just because I guess that's what I've gotten used to.
I noticed on the back of yours you have an input then for an Ethernet to plug into a hardwired system, network. Then you have a VGA outlet, which is for a monitor so that somebody who is sighted can see what's going on. You mentioned off the microphone that's also used, Ted, for training purposes?
Yeah, it's very nice for teachers because they can see, like you could teach me, and you could see what I'm doing and therefore give me feedback.
I bet you could teach me, as a matter of fact. Yeah. And you've got some USB outlets on the back and a Bluetooth as well. Cal?
I'm fascinated by this whole technology thing that you have in front of you. Now, I can understand how you can input information into it. How do you read back the information that you've put into the machine?
There is a Braille display with
right here
32 character positions on it, and it has...
Where the keyboard would be, folks, is what he's pointing to right now. And then
it's really fascinating. And then it appears
right at the
that
front
little
of the machine, right
little
on the side
buttons
towards you.
Pop up.
Yeah, the little Braille points.
Okay.
Yeah, the Braille dots pop up and go down.
That's amazing.
Then there are routing buttons, they call them, behind the keyboard, or sorry, behind the display, that you can press one of those and move the cursor on the machine right to that spot, which is really handy for editing purposes.
That's
you
amazing.
Say, ooh, I made a Braille-o at this point.
And you just press
you hit
down.
Hit the routing button.
It's a
backspace, make your correction, and
I'm
move
ask
on
you,
from
though,
there.
How long have you folks had this device? I mean, it's astounding that it's there, and I know that this is a recent... Is it a recent development, or has it been around
for a while? This particular model of Braille Note, I think, came out about a year and a half ago.
But the concept has been around for a while, hasn't it, Ted?
The Braille Note came out in 2000.
Okay, so it's been developing since...
Foster, because you're you, I got to tell you this. Huh? In 2002, I got my first Braille Note, and I bought a GPS software to load, and it used to be so much fun because when we would be driving somewhere, I would be able to guide Laura and tell her where to turn. And
you could still be a backseat driver.
Well, are you reading my mind? Because at one point we were going down Fort Street, and I said, Laura, the speed limit is 35 miles an hour, and you're going 40.
Oh.
She said, oh, no, after 40 years, I have a backseat driver. But, I mean, it was wonderful, too. I mean, the GPS in there is so powerful.
I know we're really short on time, but, Cal, you had something to say.
This is really crazy because the other day I was thinking, how would I be able to make an iPad work for a sighted, you know, an unsighted person? And I'm saying, if they could just make the surface pop up with the little dimples and stuff. And it's crazy. It's
there
already
it
been invented.
There it is.
And, you know, it's for only a mere $6,400. You can do this.
Oh, my goodness. But what a valuable tool. Jerry, we're going to have to say goodbye to you now because we just don't have enough time to talk. Maybe we'll bring you back in the last segment of the program. But, Ted, we're going to continue with you and with two young people, two high school students who are with us in our studios as well. Jerry Weichbrod, thank you so much for joining us and for the work you're doing at GM. Back in just a moment. Moment to continue our special focus on the blind and the internet. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, a very special program today. Edward L. Cal Carson with me in studio. My name is Foster Brown, and Gary Baker off this weekend. But we have Ted Lennox in studio with us, and now making it kind of like the Red Wings in their all their home game stretch. You know, you've been on here about as long as the Red Wings have been in town.
That's right.
Starting in 1998, when we first began our program, Ted was here with us. Ted is blind, and the people who are with us in studio are as well. Some of the new guests who are with us sitting in seat, we're just delighted to introduce Keithetta Hicks, who is 16 and attends Osborne High School in Detroit. Keithetta, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you.
It's so good to have you with us, and with you are your mom and your grandma, too, right?
Yes.
All right, you can say hello to them as well.
Hi.
Also with us in studio is Jeff Humphrey, and Jeff is 18, and he's in the 11th grade at Fitzgerald High in Warren, Michigan. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Foster.
And you've got your dad with you as well.
Yeah.
You can say shout out to him as well, and to all your posse back in Warren as well.
Yeah, right.
Now, I'd like to talk to the two of you about how you both have Braille notes in front of you. They're a little different than the one that Ted has in front of him. Keithetta, first of all, how long have you been using your Braille note? Which, by the way, folks, again, excuse me, it's like a laptop monitorless, has a Braille keyboard on it where your finger keyboard, our normal keys would be, but then it also has other keys on it. Keithetta, when did you learn to use yours, and how long have you been using it?
I've been using this for about 3 years. I was introduced to this maybe fourth or fifth grade.
Wow.
And I didn't know much about it, but I always thought, okay, I could give a Braille forever. Yay! but I'm using it in schools and sometimes at home. Well, a lot of times at home, if possible. I use it for schoolwork. I type papers with it. I use a calculator on it for math. Mm-hmm. And I use radio to listen to music.
Yes, because it also has an FM radio on it, besides the GPS, Ted, that you mentioned before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a planner and a calendar on it. You can use it to write things. You can use it to surf the internet as well, right?
Yes.
Now, I got to ask you, you're 16. Do you text your friends a lot with it?
It's a mindless computer, like you said, not a phone.
No. But I mean, do you text? Can you text back and forth with them in that sense? That if you text their phone, they can you do that back and forth with it?
I'm not really a text person, so okay. I just rather call them than text
okay.
them.
Okay, good. I was just
good
wondering.
Point. Good point.
Yeah, that's good. Now, Jeff, how about you? When did you start using yours?
Basically, same backstory. I started using it when I was in fourth or fifth grade. They were training us how to use it, and they try to get your computer skills up then. So I was using an older device called a Braille Light. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was one of the, like, the very first ones that came out. So it was a dinosaur. And, you know, it's a leap from what I got right in front of me.
Yeah. All right. Now, Ted, I know you taught in high schools for a long time. Did you teach the students you were dealing with to use devices like this? Or had they come out at that point?
Yeah. Very interesting thing. My last year as a teacher, before I retired, they asked me to stay one more year and go to the high school and teach the graduates before they graduated to use the Braille note. My goal, I went there, you know, started right after Labor Day, and my goal was I wanted to have them using their Braille notes effectively in classes by the end of the first marking period, which was 10 weeks long. And 3 weeks into the term, I said, Amanda, I need to borrow your Braille note this weekend to do some preparation. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, you can't borrow it. And I said, what do you mean I can't borrow? She said, I use it all the time in class. I mean, so they got into that. So it was thrilling to me. It was wonderful.
Young people, go ahead.
Well, you know, one thing I noticed, the keyboard, it's not a traditional keyboard. Is the keyboard on top sort of like a court recorder's? Keyboard, those buttons on top, or are those pad?
That is a good question, and I was going to talk about that, and then we got on to something else. But the Braille is, did I mention this? I don't think so. Braille is a six-dot program.
Yes.
And these are the six dots. I'm laying my fingers on dots 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Oh, those are like big buttons that are on the top.
Yeah.
I got you. That's where you input.
Yeah, every letter is combined of one or more of these dots. So there's six dots that I input with. Mm-hmm. Then on the right-hand side is the enter key. On the left side is the backspace key. Ah. And then at the bottom is guess what?
The space bar.
Space bar. So okay. There's six keys. That's all we have. Six right. keys, and you just go
and
like
your
crazy.
Monitor, essentially, what? Is your fingers
yeah.
sitting on that Braille yeah. strip that's down yeah. below that.
Well, and we can turn speech on if we want to.
Now, we're going to do a little experiment with that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, I hope we are,
bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
That's
yeah.
really amazing. You know, I never learned how to type. I should get one of these. Instead of this big QWERTY keyboard, I only need to learn six. That'd yep. be. Yep. I got a chance.
All you use is these six fingers.
Well, I'm almost there because I'm up to four fingers and a thumb.
you're getting close there, Ed.
Now, that's right. Keith, how important is this machine to you?
It's very important. It's an essential in my everyday life as far as school going.
Yeah.
And I feel more independent than, you know, okay, such and so, please write this down for me, unless it's not working, of course. But it's very, very important. I need this. Because nowadays we have to type, you know, in high school you do everything by computer and everything
right.
else.
Right.
They hardly ever accept papers.
Right.
So, well, for me, I really love this and I really need this.
Jeff, does it make you feel more like part of your class rather than kind of an outsider not being able to join in?
You know, I haven't really thought about it in that way to really actually give that some thought. I suppose. Because I can do all my work, but even if not, there'd be other ways.
Yeah.
I've just never really given that a lot of thought.
So how valuable is it to you then?
Oh, very. I've had times where one of these has broken down at me, and you know, I've realized what it's like completely. You know, you can't write a paper, you can't do your emails,
wow.
anything. And so when I'm part of a political party, and so when I need to get emails and things from a guy from Texas and me in Michigan, you know, it's really useful to have. If it breaks down, there goes my best ways of communication.
Now, we want to give an example of some input here, by the way. You guys have got, is it a poem that you folks have
yeah,
got?
Yeah, we have yes. a little poem that we've
okay.
written.
Okay,
okay. And we're going to have Jeff read the poem with Braille so that hopefully everyone will hear it, and then Keith Etta will it will do it with speech. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, you know, the audience out there and, you know, wherever they are in Flint or
wherever they're listening us from. Okay, right. Jeff, okay, go ahead.
So Jeff, read the poem, but don't read it fast.
I know. Okay. It's called Banana Nana 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 Nana.
Okay.
Okay. I thought I'd win the spelling bee and go right to the top. But when I spelled banana, I didn't know when to stop.
Right. You got it, Foster, right?
That's banana, cute. Now, he's been reading that with his fingers, right?
And he was reading it, and he was using what's called the thumb keys to advance his Braille display one line at a time.
So that was the pauses, right, Jeff? We were hearing as you were going between lines.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, because you can only feel so much space in there. Keithetta, right. Now let's hear it from your end.
Now let's hear speech. Now Keithetta's going to turn speech on.
Folder name. Press enter. Document. List of all banana. Banana.
That's the name of the poem.
Banana. I thought I'd win the spelling bee and go right to the top. But when I spelled banana, I didn't know when to stop. End of document.
That's really cool. So that is an example of Keithetta. And by the way, how often do you use the audio versus the Braille?
That's a good question.
I use it every so often if I'm not sure if I spelled the word right. And a lot of times I have the speech turned off because I'm in class and I have to hear the teacher.
Oh.
So out of respect, I turn the speech off. But if I'm not sure I spelled the word exactly correct, but when I hear it's pronounced, I turn the speech back on. So
you know, I'm just wondering if I'm writing emails to someone that is blind, that must just kill you when all my misspellings, because I'm a horrible speller.
He's notorious for it.
I have to tell you that one of my first emails I got from, I won't name him, but he's sitting to my left.
Uh-oh.
He said, well, we'll see you on April 26th.
Oh, you had to tell him that.
Yeah, I did have to tell that. So I had to write back and say, wait a minute, are you talking about next year or the following year?
Oh, so cool.
Thanks for asking.
So I can understand exactly how this whole dynamic works. You're in class, you get your assignment, you input that assignment into the Braille note, and then you transmit by email your paper when you're all done.
Not exactly.
Okay.
You're right about the typing, but how is my teacher supposed to see it? So
right.
I use what's known as USB cord, hook it on the back of my printer, Braille note.
Sure.
And the other goes to my printer, and there are certain commands I use to print it off, so my teacher has a physical copy of what I write.
That is so slick. Wow.
And it converts it from Braille to print so that, you know, you're not reading these dots. It converts it to print.
Ted, that's wonderful. Keithetta, thank you so much. Our guests in studio have been Keithetta Hicks, 16. She's from Osborne High in Detroit, and Jeff Humphrey, 18, from Fitzgerald High. I wish you both the very best, and I know that you're going to go places because you folks have put in the extra effort. Thanks so much for being with us. Back in just a minute with somebody who teaches folks how to use these devices. Thank you for joining us for this special program. We've been talking about some tools that our blind listeners use or can use in order to be able to get on the internet, to write, to listen to music. You heard Keithetta, one of our last guests, talking about that. If you'd like to find out more information, by the way, about the device that they're using, it's the Braille Note Apex BT18 Braille Note Taker. At least that's the link we have, which is probably, Ted, that's the top of the line, I think. One you got right there? Whoop, hang on a second. Your microphone has to get on. There we go. We got it on.
BT32 is
okay.
What I have. There's two kinds. One has an 18 cell and one has a 32 cell.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so
that's what the numbers stand for.
Yes.
But in any case, I want to tell you folks, there is a live link on our homepage. If you go to internetadvisor.net, you'll see that's in blue there. Just click on that if you want more information about it as well.
You know, these guys with Braille notes, they're just as bad as guys with PCs. Oh, I have a 32 cell.
And just to complicate matters, there's also a version that has a typewriter style QWERTY keyboard on it for those of you who for some reason haven't learned how to key in Braille for some reason.
Oh, wow, that's cool. That's the voice of Jerry Weichbrot, who was with us as well. He's an engineer at GM.
I'm just curious how many words a minute approximately you could type with Braille. Because I know court question. Recorders can just, they're up to like 120 words easily with court recorders.
How about you, Ted? What do you think?
I can type fast if I choose to. I have no idea the speed, but I certainly not slow.
Now, by the way, it spell checks you, doesn't it?
Oh, that's a good question. Yes, you can spell check your documents very nicely. And one of the things I like, if you're not sure how you're spelling a word, you can put the cursor on that word and then go to the built-in dictionary, and it will either say you're correct or it will replace it and spell it correctly.
That is fascinating.
It's really nice. That's fascinating.
Ted Lennox with us, by the way, who's been with us since 1998, back on again and introducing us to all friends like Jerry Weckbrot, who's with us in studio, and another man who is with us as well.
I can bet you dollar to donuts if you want to know where the fast typers are, look behind us.
Yeah, that's true. The young people are back there, the ones that are really fast.
You are right on that.
Young, agile fingers.
Very, very. John Whitaker is with us. John has also been on with us a number of times. And John, matter of fact, we call on you from time to time. We've called you during programs suddenly. We had a listener, I think, was it in Jamaica one time? We had somebody calling
that's
in.
Right. Oh my
and
gosh.
From Jamaica, and it was a blind and was asking about some of the services. Now, you're here, John, to represent an organization called iChallenged.org. And by the way, again, folks, the link to that is on our homepage, internetadvisor.net. Tell us about what iChallenged is, John.
Well, iChallenged is a nonprofit organization based here in Michigan. Dearborn Heights is its location, but it has a floating location right now. We're totally electronic, if you know what I mean. No permanent address. We're centered on services for the vision impaired community. And really, we've set our aim to empower, enrich life, and support those that we serve. With the technology of the day and with services that actually relate to healthcare and other services for the blind.
So it's important, when you mentioned that, it's important to broaden the focus here. This isn't just simply the blind. These are people, for instance, who may have macular degeneration.
Oh,
and
right.
Have terrible vision impairment, any kind of vision impairment. Okay, so
actually we go beyond that. We even get involved with people who are quadriplegics that are blind. We've had one of those on your show before.
Yeah.
So other people with disabilities that limit them, but our focus is the vision impaired.
And I love it. Your task is empowering these people through these technologies.
Absolutely. And these technologies, as you've just seen with the Braille note, are just that. These people can compete on a straight basis with sighted people with these technologies.
Well, Jerry, how long have you been an engineer now out of the test track at GM?
I graduated with my engineering degree in 1985.
So you have been, now were you, was your vision impaired at that point in time, Chair?
I've been vision impaired since infancy.
Okay, so for all, and you have been, you competed in a very competitive field, you're working on software development, I mean this is no slouch, nobody's making like room for you, let the blind guy in, you really are a contributing member to that team that's there, nobody's making room for the handicapped guy.
Yeah, and the technology was a little bit different back in those days. I was using a mechanical Braille writer that I would haul around campus with me in my college career.
So you fought your way uphill to get where you are. That's what I was trying to make this point.
I can't even feature what it would be like to be a student now or entering the workforce at this point.
Yeah. Without the kind of electronics that we have now. Ed, you were going to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, it reminds me of the old teletype technology I used to work on in the 80s, where paper tape punch machines for machines. Yeah. The thing you would have to haul around was probably the size of like a typewriter, I would imagine. A
pretty big thing to lug around with you,
in other
words.
It was a little smaller than that, but it was amazingly heavy.
And now you've got this wonderful device in front of you that is as light as any kind of laptop that we would haul around. Now, John, do you then train people like
Absolutely.
Jerry on these machines?
Yes, we do. We train Braille Note, a range of technologies.
Like the JAWS, the kind of the screen readers?
Screen readers, JAWS, Window Eyes, just a range of scanners that the Sarah that reads books.
E-books as well.
Anything. That takes a print book and turns it into voice for a blind person.
Okay,
you just scan it like copier. There are electronic versions of devices now that read e-books to you. Many of them, the Kindle is one.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know Siri technology that Apple has out, Cal. Oh, you wonder if there's going to be a Siri voice to do some of the reading instead of this mechanical robot-like voice.
It's just very difficult to keep up with all the advances. And we like to pride ourselves that we're right at that cutting edge. And
that's exciting.
As you can see, we employ many different technologies. One of the areas that we really focus on is what we call our one-on-one guided training. And really, that's a combination of both remote training, that means where we connect to another person's computer, computer via our computer, and we can actually, a blind teacher can actually read the screen of the remote person.
Wow.
It's just remarkable.
So, Ed, this would be, or, and Cal, this would be like your remote desktop, where as a tech or an IT tech, you could get into somebody's computer and work on it?
Exactly.
The same kind of thing.
Yeah,
you can
except
do that.
A blind teacher can do that, or a sighted teacher can do that. Mm. And there are many people that are not born blind, but go blind during their life. And
your friend of mine had an industrial accident.
Right, and they're facing the loss of their job, their income.
Yep, yep.
There's the job in jeopardy scenario that we get into, where we go in and analyze a person's needs on a job and preserve their job with technology and training.
So there's a ton of stuff that you do through iChallenge. Now, here's my question to you. How much does it all cost?
Whoa, I didn't think I'd get nailed on that today.
Because there are people out there who are hearing this who are saying, I'd love to take advantage of that.
Our prices are, for the state of Michigan, $60 an hour. However, there are grants and there are scholarships that we provide that offset that for the individual and make it affordable. So don't get afraid about asking for help if the number scares you.
That's what I wanted.
Don't let it scare you away.
I want you to tell, because I'm imagining somebody out there listening saying, oh, I'd love this. I wonder if there's a way of my getting involved in it. Yes, folks, you could even do it remotely. You don't have to necessarily be at that place. So you could be in Port Huron listening to me or anywhere else in the state listening to me, Bay City, Grand Rapids, wherever.
All you need, you do need a computer.
Yep.
And you do need a phone.
Okay.
Okay, and you do need internet access.
There you go.
Give us a call and we'll get you going.
Okay, and the number, and we'll put this up as well, but right now you go to iChallenged.org and we'll give you the number, which is 313-910-7822. 313-910-7822. And John, we'll post that as well. John Whitaker, thank you. Ted Lennox, thank you so much.
Yep.
Jerry Reichbrod, thank you so much for being with us.
Ted, 30 seconds for us, an ending?
No, I'm sorry, we're out of time. You've got so many stories to go, Ted. Thank you so much, though, for bringing everybody around here and being with us. Guys, we'll be back in just a little bit to answer some questions from our listeners out there right now. Our number is 800-859-0957. Again, it's 800-859-0957. Stick around. We got another hour, and it's your hour, so please do give us a call. Thank you so much for joining us for hour number two, and it's your hour. This hour doesn't happen unless you give us a call at 800-859-0957. It's open for any question you have about your computer or your electronic device that we can answer. Cal Carson and Ed Rudell are in studio here with me, Foster Brown, to help answer those questions. But we got to get you on the phone talking to us. 800-859-0957 is the number. Give us a ring right now. We'll get some answers for you.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, hour number two, and that is the hour when you are the star. Have you had something on your mind? Was it something that's bothering you about your computer and you don't know who to turn to? Well, this is your lucky day because the phone lines are open and we've got some experts in here who probably together have close to a half a century of expertise in dealing with computer problems. That's Cal Carson and Ed Rudell. And the number here is 800-859-0957, 800-859-0957. We'll give you a few moments more to get some calls in here, and we'll get back to you in just a moment after we hear these words from Mr. Eric Anderson and this week's Mac Minute.
This week on the Mac Minute, WWDC and an app milestone. The stage is set for the 2012 Worldwide Developers Conference. Apple announced this week it will kick off the WWDC on June 11th. This year's keynote address will focus on the future of the iOS and Mountain Lion. The conference will also feature over 100 technical sessions presented by Apple's engineers. The Worldwide Developers Conference runs June 11th through 15th at the Moscone Center West in San Francisco. Tickets for the event are on sale now. Also this week, Apple's application store hit a milestone five-figure mark. Apple's digital storefront now offers over 10,000 applications for download. The store allows Mac users to digitally download any kind of software from office suites to games. For the Internet Advisor and the MacMinute.net, I'm Eric Anderson, and that's a rumor and speculation-free edition of the Mac Minute, give or take a few seconds.
And that's a miracle. I imagine that. A Mac Minute without any rumors or speculation. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a real Mac Minute then, Cal.
Maybe it's actually just a rumor.
That could be. Hey, before we get to our callers, Alex will be with you and Dave as well and all the rest of you calling in at 800-859-0957. But Ed, you had a cute story from this week.
Yes. Spoke to my father yesterday. He had hip replacement surgery. He's, what, 81 years old, born in 1931. And his knees have gone and he's becoming the bionic man. So they did the hip now. And while he was at a rehabilitation place after the hospital stay, he was there and the lady goes, I know that name, Ed Rudell. Ed Rudell, where do I know that name? She came back at 11 o'clock at night and my dad's watching TV and she's like, Ed Rudell, I know that. Are you the one that's on the radio? He goes, Senior Junior.
No, were you called Junior when you were growing up?
No, I was never called Junior.
Yeah, neither was I.
Yeah, because I'm Edward Joseph Rudell. My father's Edward Charles.
Right, same thing. My father and I had different middle names. But we were both fostered.
Edward Jr. But I tell you, he got a lot more people coming into his room after that.
All looking for advice.
But and his bedmate, the guy in the same room, was basically, I called the Internet Advisor and they helped me out really one time. They were great, you know. So
I was
good story.
I was saying, Ed, his segment, the toolkit on the Internet Advisor, far and away over these 15 years, has been the most visited place. Of any of the places.
I still use it. I mean, I can't, probably six times a week, people at work will have problems and I send them to the toolkit.
Yep.
You know, you need to download this malware bytes or here's an article on how to fix this
problem. There you have. There's a recommendation right now, folks. That is go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then to the toolkit on top. And Ed's over the years has been collecting all sorts of these great free tools to help you.
And that or you just hang out in a hospital somewhere and find someone who's listened to the show and they give you the link as well.
Well, and now we have Emily Hayes' articles up there as well for social media.
Right, the social media stuff, which is really good as well. All right, let's get to our callers now and welcome Alan from Macomb Township. Hey, how you doing? And welcome to the Internet Advisor.
I'm doing well here. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
I have a new computer. I'm running Windows 7 Ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking for a card reader for it, and I was checking the online reviews, and they said a lot of the ones out now will not be working with Windows 8, so I want some advice on what I should buy.
You know, I find that hard to believe because Windows 8 is basically just Windows 7 with a new front end, a new window, if you will, a new display and how to present the information.
A new GUI, as they say.
Yeah, a new graphical user interface. Yeah. Thank you. And, I don't know. I mean, what type of card reader? Are you talking about a physical business card scanner or a card reader for the SD cards and micro SD cards?
Yeah, one of them. Internal for like my camera and USB 3 and...
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, those are very cheap, or they can be very cheap.
Here's what I think the real problem is that...
I just want to know, what your recommendations would be.
Yeah.
Well, my first recommendation would be just wait a while until they actually come out with card readers that have... the biggest issue is that not so much the card reader won't work, is whether or not the manufacturer will write a driver that will work with it.
Right. And the simplest solution, what I've done in the past, is I buy a card reader that has a USB port on it. That way, it'll always work with the computer. And they make them so it just looks like a flash drive. So internal to the card reader itself, it translates it so it looks like a USB flash drive. Because all laptops, Mac or PC or Linux, will support USB. Mm-hmm. And it'll just look like a disk drive or a flash drive.
I'm sure the Windows 8 will also support. The only difference would be if it was an older flash drive reader, for instance, or card reader that was like USB 2 or USB 1.
USB 1. Stay away from USB 1 because those are the $7
ones. I'm running the latest and greatest.
Okay. Well, then USB 2, anything that has USB 2 on it will be fine.
Of course, the other side of the coin. Do you currently have a card reader right now?
I have have one in one of my other machines.
Okay, and it's built into the machine or is it external?
It's internal. I put that in.
Right.
And who makes the card reader?
Boy, I don't know offhand.
Well, you know, I would look. I'd look into the machine and look at the manufacturer of that card reader. Then go to their website and see whether or not they have drivers for Windows 8.
That will be the difference. Will be the drivers.
I'm thinking maybe the people that are, you know, they're running the beta 8. And I'm thinking they're having the trouble.
Well, I wouldn't do that. As he was saying, I'd find the company that provided your last card reader and then see if you can, after that, find out if they have the drivers for Windows 8. But I wouldn't really worry about that because I really think it'll be simply a USB connection. Alan, thanks for giving us a call, and we hope we've helped you. Back for more calls. Welcome to the Internet Advisor once again, our second hour. Thank you very much for joining us. By the way, all throughout the week, our forums are open. If you want to put a question in there, we've got all sorts of people who are visit it regularly, besides our experts who are in studio here, some of the other folks who are listeners, Ben Carpenter and Paul Sr. and a whole bunch of other people check in there to help answer questions as well. So that's the forum, and you go to that on our InternetAdvisor.net site. And there's also news information there as well. Okay, 1-800-859-0957 is the number, and let's go to Dave, who's called that number from New Baltimore and is looking for some help. Dave, how can we help you?
How are you doing?
Good, sir. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a bunch of people that I've been setting up with the new iPads, and I'm actually kicking around the idea of buying one, but I'm a PC person, and Apple is usually hard to interface to a PC. So how easy is it to move files from an iPad to a PC?
Kel, thoughts?
Well, you're going to load iTunes onto that PC. You'll load iTunes for Windows on there. And then the files that you would have on that PC, for example, pictures and that sort of thing, you could just put those into your pictures folder, and then they would just move from the pictures folder on your computer to your iPad.
Okay, so you have to have iTunes on there?
iTunes is always your medium, whether you're on a Mac or a PC, to move your data back and forth.
It's for synchronization. I was listening to a commentary the other day. It's become the mule for everything that Apple has. And so if you want to synchronize, if you want to get
back
the music or back it up or whatever, you do all of that right now through iTunes. And some
people, does that also function through like Wi-Fi and that kind of stuff?
Yes, of course. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You can back it up through iCloud using Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay. But I appreciate the info.
Yeah,
sure. Thank you very much for giving us a call, Ned. Yeah, glad you asked that question. And that's the kind of question, by the way, you could ask as well.
Well, it's a completely different synergy, if you will, or methodology. Everyone in Windows environments is used to dragging and dropping and stuff like that.
That's true.
And your entire interface is through iTunes, so it's a complete mind shift.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, you're still dragging and dropping in the sense that you can drag and drop what you want into that folder.
Yes.
And then iTunes would, you know, mule it in, as Foster says.
It ricochets it off the cloud, am I right?
Well, no. Like, for example, if he had a bunch of pictures that he wanted to get into his iPad, he would take those pictures and dump them into his pictures folder on his Windows machine.
Yep.
And then when he hooks up his iPad directly to that Windows machine, it would pull those pictures in and put them
through iTunes.
Yes.
Okay. iTunes.
How about non-standard files? I just wanted to explore this because I really don't know. What about non-standard files? If I just wanted to have, I don't know, a DWG file on there that was an old CAD diagram.
You mean as a file keeper?
Not necessarily. Say someone out there created a little applet that lets me view CAD drawings.
If the applet was wrote for a iPad.
Yeah.
Then I would think that you'd be able to do it because it would just be stored and you would just, you know, put it into a folder.
Otherwise, I think it would be the same thing as what happened on a Windows machine. If you drop a file extension on there, it doesn't recognize it. Says, I don't have software to handle that. You know, you have a special application for that.
Is there like a downloads folder or something like on an Android device that's on an iPad or a miscellaneous file folders?
Or what they could do is they could just make a subfolder under like either pictures or music or whatever, those standard folders that they have, and then just point that application to that folder and they'd be able to see it.
Yeah, you know, because I've seen doctors carrying around iPads and they're showing x-rays and stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do those get to that device?
A lot of that's probably coming off the cloud or coming to it wirelessly.
Yeah. There you go.
And a lot of those x-rays and stuff like that were probably written out as PDFs or they were put out as JPEGs and then put into the a pictures folder, right, and then they'd be able to see them that way.
Thanks for explaining that to me,
Yeah, Kyle. PDFs probably, I'm going to guess.
A lot of PDFs are really big on the pad.
Yep, exactly, because you can handle images as well as documents in, yep, that, in that format. Okay, let's go to George from Manitou Beach. Hey, George, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How do I delete from recent documents on the Excel spreadsheet program? I've got seven documents in there, and five of them are outdated, and I can't get rid of them.
They're outdated. Usually those files are, the real files are stored in your default location, which is usually My Documents. In Microsoft Excel, when you're using the drop-down menu, and I'm assuming you're talking about within Excel, is that correct?
Correct.
Usually you can right-mouse click on those and select remove from...
Yeah, that's right.
I believe you can remove it from that entry for that recent file list.
No.
It does not work.
I right-click on that, and then I get customize quick access, show quick access, and minimize the ribbon.
Okay, now if Windows is anything like Mac is, you can go into the settings, at least on the Mac under the general settings, and then it has track recently opened documents, display, and then you put in a number of how many recently owned documents that you want to remember. If you change that to zero, it'll clear that list out, and then you can change it back to whatever number you want it to be.
Once again, you go into what?
Okay, you're using Windows machine, and I'm hoping that
Windows
in between...
Windows 7, yeah.
What version of Office? Is it a 2007 or 2010?
7, I believe.
Okay.
Do they have, like, settings files in there where you can track recently?
You can hit the... if you said it was running 2007, then you hit the little Microsoft symbol, and you can go down to Excel Options. And in here, there should be a way of showing how many previous... documents to list. I don't know if there's a way of actually clearing the list. There should be. I just don't have it memorized. And right, and sometimes with these, you really can't get to the options of Excel. You have to go into Microsoft Word. And Microsoft Word,
oh, really,
has all of the settings. If you're running the Office suite, it has more advanced settings. So you may not find the number like the, you know, save or this list, the most recent size list is 10, and say you only want it to be 3 files. But, you know, I really don't know how to clear that. The caller brings up a good question.
If you go to 0, close the application, and open it up again, it'll clear that list.
George, I'm going to tell you what I just found. Now, I am using Office on the Mac, okay? But when I open up Excel in Office 2011 for the Mac, and I go to Open Recent, at the very bottom of the list it says Clear Recent. And that then should flush that out, and you won't have any more showing there, because that's just logging what's been in there. But those documents, you're saying those documents are no longer on your computer?
Or they're old versions.
It's only going to clear reference
they,
to
them. Yes, they are on the computer, but I want them gone. Well, 5 of them I want gone.
You wait a minute. Now, hold it. So you want to clear them out of the recent list?
Well, that's where they're showing up when I open up Excel.
Okay, now hang on a second. You can clear that recent list, as I said, by going to the bottom of the drop-down list, and it says Clear Recent. Now, if you want to find out where those are on your computer, however, since you've got Windows 7, I would go down to the bottom left, get the name of one of the Excel files, okay? Let's say it's George 003 Excel, okay?
Or
.xls, whatever what the extension is. Put that name in the search box at the bottom left of your computer, and it will tell you where it's at, if that's what you're looking for. It'll take you to the file where it is, and then you can delete it in that file.
Okay.
Because removing it from the recent ones will only take out the reference to it. It will not remove the file itself, as far as I know. It's like a shortcut to it.
Yeah, but does he want to remove the file?
Well, that's what he's saying he does. George, saying you want to remove that file, right? Those old files?
Yes.
Yeah, he wants to remove the old files. So when you clear that recent list, you're only clearing the references. It would be like shortcuts to it.
All right.
But if you want to find those exact files, copy down the names of them, and then again, go into that search box at the bottom left on your when you click on that little circle at the bottom left for your Windows 7. There's a search box that comes up there. Put the name of one of those files in there. Tell it to search, and it'll find out where it's at. Then you can remove it there, okay?
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And that's important, because in that recent files, you're just getting rid of the references to that file, not the actual file itself. And that's the important thing to keep in mind when you clear that out. And you can always search for the actual file then on Windows 7 or any other on Mac. You can go up to the Finder and do the same thing there.
And Cal's answer was absolutely correct. About you go out there, you zero it out,
mm-hmm.
and then you increase it back up to 10 or whatever.
Excellent. All right. We'll be back to take some more of your calls at 800-859-0957. Thank you so much for joining us here for the Internet Advisor by the by. If you would like to hear the podcast of this program, you can either visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net and click on podcasts, and you will get that. That's up on the border up there, the toolbar, where we have forum, podcasts, toolkits, social media, etc. Or you can just wait and go over to the right-hand side, and you can sign up for iTunes, because you can download it immediately through iTunes. By the way, we also have a link to our Google page there, our Google Plus page, and Facebook. And you'll find us there as well as on Twitter.
Now, the great part about going to our website, internetadvisor.net, is you get a chance to see a picture of Ed Rudell. So,
yes.
So you might want to go both places just for fun.
That's excellent. All right. Very good. And by the way, usually the day after our broadcast, live broadcast, I put that podcast up for you to hear. Okay, let's go to Cliff from Taylor. Cliff, welcome to the Internet Advisor, and how may we help you?
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. You're always a help. I've got a problem here. Printing from my iPad. I recently bought a HP 5514 printer, which is, compatible with AirPrint and ePrint and everything. When I can actually print from my iPad, but when I go to print, I can't pull up the printer dialog box, that has the properties where you can tell it print in grayscale, print, fast draft, all the properties that I get. When I installed the software on my laptop and my wife's laptop, the CD that came with it, naturally I couldn't do that with my iPad. And like I say, when I go to print on the laptops, I get that dialog box letting me change...
Like orientation, landscape, and portrait, and fit to page, stuff like that, or bold. You know, Cal, is there advanced feature? Because I know HP provides... Are you using the HP ePrint application, or are you using the native one in the iPad?
I don't know what I'm... the iPad seemed to pick up the printer... by itself.
Right.
I don't recall doing anything at all to
and it
the
will.
iPad.
And it will, and it'll do a great job, but I believe HP provides an ePrint application,
oh.
and that may actually offer you more features. Cal, are you familiar with that?
Well,
go ahead.
If I may,
sure.
When I go to the HP, in the directions, they say, if you don't have a CD to load this drive, which I obviously don't on the iPad, it says go to the HP site. They give you the site
mm-hmm.
and download the driver.
Right, right.
Now, I go there. I pick out the printer. There's a good match for the printer, 5514, B111, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I punch on that, and the next step is pick your operating system. And I go to pick my operating system. And it, the drop-down box gives me the last five or six generations of Windows, and then it says Mac OS 10. There's nothing that; those are my only choices. There's nothing about the iPad.
Okay, give me the model number on that printer one more time, please.
5514.
Okay, I guess one of my first questions is, I'll go back to my what I just asked a few moments ago. Have you tried to use the iTunes store to search for an HP's ePrint application?
Oh, yeah.
That leads me back. That leads me back, I believe, to trying to download the software.
Oh, okay.
When I get to the where that leads me, I still end up a couple of different routes that I've tried. They all lead back to the HP site, which point I can't come up with the correct...
That's just a shame. Shame on them for not making that easy. Here you've bought one of their excellent products, and they have not made it very easily for you to print from your iPad, one of the most popular devices that the computer generation has seen in 20 years.
It is great.
And I hope there's a representative out there listening. Because, you know, I work for HP, and I was told through multiple emails through our marketing departments that buy an e-print, and which I haven't done yet, and you will be able to download iPad application to be able to print.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
So, but maybe I misunderstood.
It was easy enough, like I say, getting it to print. It picked up
all
by itself, but I just can't find a way yet to get that dialog box, which I would think I would be able to somehow.
Cal, do you come up with anything yet?
No, not yet. And he's right. It is a little difficult to find what you want to be able to do that. I tell you what, continue to listen during the show, and if we come up with something, we'll let you know. If not, then we'll definitely put something out in our forums later on so you can take a look at that.
Sure.
But
and that would be at cal@internetadvisor.net.
Correct. That's correct. Go ahead.
It sounds like you came across the same roadblock I did.
Thank you for bringing that up to us.
That's a good one to bring up.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was, you know, just supposed to be really easy.
It should
be. Hold on. I think I found something here real quick. Okay.
It says
if you go to the App Store, and in App Store, type in HP ePrint Home and Biz.
Isn't that what I said earlier?
I think you did.
You said ePrint.
I just said ePrint.
I believe I have been there, but I've been a lot of different places.
Go back and try and pull that down. It's a free app, of course, and install it. And according to that, it should take care of you.
Yeah, I mean, because when you're at the iTunes store and their app store, it should just download almost instantly through
your
iPad.
I'm in the app store, and I can't find that, Cal. Where did you find that?
Well, I found it at the HP website.
You know, it's on the HP website.
But I will go to the app store and check it.
Because I just tried the app store, and I'm not getting it.
Cal is pulling up his iPad that he has, and during the next commercial break, he'll search for that. And maybe we might have an answer for you, Richard.
Okay, Cliff.
Okay, now, what is the name of the app I'm looking for?
It's called HP ePrint Home and Biz. That's spelled B-I-Z.
Right.
Okay, so we'll also dig for it as well, Cliff, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And we will try to find that for him. Richard from Rochester. Sir, how may we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Yes, hello.
Hey.
I've got a similar problem with a printer from the iPad.
Oh, my goodness, it's the day for it.
Yeah, this is for Canon. Canon has a driver for the MP560, and the problem I'm having is that there's menus on it, and one of them is photo album, so you can supposedly bring up your pictures to print.
Now, this is within the application that Canon wrote for the iPad?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
When I try to bring up the photo album, it tells me that it cannot use a photo album because the use of local services is not allowed. Do I have to go into settings and change something?
Sounds like when you first installed the application, I know on my Android, I do not have an iPhone or an iPad, that when I first launched it, it usually asks permission, do you wish to allow this application access to, as an example, a GPS software or location data or to your file structure? And something similar to that usually happens on iPads as well. So one of the simplest solutions might be to actually remove the application and then re-download it. Is this something you had to purchase, or was it free as a courtesy?
No, it's a free driver from Canon.
Yeah, it's a little application. So
yeah,
I would try that just in case that when you've... How long have you had it on your iPad? Have you been trying to get...
2 or 3 days.
2 or 3 days? Oh, so you would probably remember if you received that little disclaimer when it came up. Asking,
well, it comes up every time, and it has, just like you say, do you want to allow this to locate this service? And when I press OK, nothing happens.
that just keeps repeating.
Probably because he doesn't have location services turned on.
Well, not so much location, but it just doesn't have access to the local file structure. I'm extrapolating.
Okay.
I was giving that as an example, location services for okay. GPS stuff. Well, what was the message it was saying, Richard?
The message from the beginning, it's cannot use photo album because use of location service is not allowed.
Oh, I was right.
allow the use of location services, yeah. And you hit OK, and nothing happens.
So, Cal, how do you go into your iPad device and enable location services for applications?
Well, the first thing you would do is you go to settings.
Right.
Settings, okay.
Mm-hmm. And then you would go to, I believe it's, I want to say,
if it's an iOS
oh,
device.
Oh, no. You go to settings, and then you go to location services. And then there's a toggle to turn it off or turn it on.
Okay, but he's getting a message that this application doesn't have the rights to be able to use it. Is there a use location services? So is there an application or a way of enabling or disabling that?
I'm looking, and I don't see anything.
We'll noodle on this during the break and come back to you if we can, okay?
We know how it's supposed to work. We just can't find it.
Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, I want to thank a couple of our unsung heroes here. Rich Lozinski, who's our engineer, and Annie Nichols, who is our producer. Does a great job of answering phones. She's a pleasant young lady that you meet when you call us here. Thank you so much, both of you, for working at that. Well, this has been our iPad day, guys, and we've done some research, and both two guys have answers. Ed, you want to start off with Cal, why don't you start with yours, working backwards. You had the HP answer, I think, right?
Yeah. If you're on your iPad and you go to the applications application, how funny that is, more commonly known as the App Store, and you click on that and you do a search, and as soon as you put in HP, the first thing that's going to come up is HP ePrint Home and Biz. And it's a new version, too. It's version 4.1. You download that. It supports iOS 5, and it has controls. Not complete controls, but it does have some controls for printing and stuff like that. Things like for duplexing and scanning and some enhancements that are in as well.
We should say there's another app that's called HP Printer Control, which may even give you more functionality. But there's a whole bunch of apps in there for the iPad.
Yeah, I would start with the ePrint one first,
right?
Because it's made specifically for ePrinting to the wireless printers that HP makes.
Now, you had something, Eddie, for the Canon.
Well,
question.
Apparently, the iPad has the ability of, you can enable location services for everything, or you can enable location services per application. So, Cal,
same thing, by the way, on the iPhone.
Yes.
With iOS, I believe that's the case. You can say yes to certain ones and no to certain ones.
So you basically go into settings from the home screen and then tap on the location services. And for this gentleman, I would tap them off first. I mean, if they're on, tap them off,
yeah.
And then a list will appear in the same area. So you click on the settings icon and then go to location services, and then you can scroll through the list, and then you can enable each application that's installed that requires
location services.
You can enable and disable it,
yep.
And he needs to enable it for the application.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what Cal said earlier.
Good.
But now we found it in printed
Good.
Form.
We got it. We got the
from
proof.
From a Candid Help website.
Okay, guys, two great answers for the iPad. All right, let's go to Judy right now from Lapeer, and let's see if we can help you. Look, Judy.
Yes, I just bought a new computer. I got it a few days ago. I had to call for some technical support, and the person that helped me, he had to put me into somebody else. But both of them told me I should have bought a software warranty. And it's like, well,
software warranty?
Yeah.
No, I've heard of this. I've heard of this, and a lot of companies are doing this overseas, and they want you to buy a different package through that call center that provides you software warranty.
Oh, that's a scam.
So, but,
pardon me.
So when you called, who did you call initially? Was it like a Dell or a Microsoft or a Gateway? Or
it was Dell.
Okay.
And I bought like a lot of warranty with it, more than I planned on, just because I wanted to do a 12-month financing with no interest, so I had to add a little bit more money onto it. And then he's like, oh, he just made it sound like it was so important, and I was so unprotected.
He's just trying. No, they're trying to sell you something
it's
else.
It's called upselling, honey.
You know,
they're trying to do it.
Now, either this is coming through Dell, which I've heard people say, or it could be coming through a separate
particular call center.
Third party.
It might be. They sounded like they were from some other country.
Well, and it may be just the call center itself is trying to hustle this particular thing.
Yeah, because the sales lady that I, when I purchased this, she,
no,
you know.
She wouldn't have said anything about it.
No, she didn't say anything about
it. Okay, now, was your problem resolved?
Yes, basically what it was is I have a widescreen monitor.
Yes.
And everything was moved to the left about a half an inch too far, where I couldn't see the start button and other things.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I had a black band along the right. The right.
Right.
Side.
And they figured it out and helped you with that?
Yeah, the first guy couldn't figure it out. He had to put somebody else on.
Was it the monitor that was the problem, or was it software?
I think it was just in settings. I think
it's a setting.
It's a setting. Yeah, they got out of whack.
I wonder who you could call to file a complaint.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because I just, like, every time I call for support, I don't want somebody to...
No, you're right. You should not have to go through that.
Because you already paid for... You're supposed to get a standard one-year warranty. You paid for additional, and they're trying to cram something else down your throat?
That's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
How long have you had the computer?
Only a few days. Yeah. Well, I've had it, but I just got it set up a couple days ago.
So effectively, she's only been on it a few days.
Boy, that's just wrong.
No.
You know, I'd put it back in a box and send it back to him and say, give me my money back. But that would just be me. I would just call Dell up, and I'd ask for their customer, you know, relations department. And I would voice strongly how you feel about that particular situation.
And I wouldn't stick with the person who answered the phone. I'd say, I'd like to talk to your supervisor.
Right. Okay.
You'll get kicked up a notch then. You go to customer service, customer satisfaction, and you're more likely to be heard there than you are with the frontline person.
And you can also sell that you voiced it on WJR in the area, and we have over 30 states that listen to us.
I will do that.
All right, Judy. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you for your help.
I'm sorry to hear that's happening. Because
Dell was great customer
service. They were
service.
Superb. They were superb.
And he always gets the people in there trying to sell more, and they make more profits.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just where it's going.
Greg from East Lansing, how can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Hi, guys. Hey, listen, I've been doing Windows Backup.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, what does that backup? If I got files that are not in window-designated areas, like in personalized folders, will Windows find those and back them up, or do I have to point to different folders?
Well, I'm sorry, what version of Windows are you running?
Vista.
Okay. And you're using the Windows backup tools?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. It should automatically catch those because it backs up the entire unit.
Documents and settings, isn't it?
It does that. It does the entire system. But usually you can do a customized backup, and you can tell it specifically what files and folders you want to do.
But if
because you're running, if you upgrade to Windows 7 for $100, you can get one of the best backup utilities that Microsoft, that a lot of companies, you could do a complete image of your computer, and then you could tell it just to back up just these particular documents as well.
Yeah.
So in case your computer dies, you use a Windows 7 bootable media that you can make, and then you can create your own factory installation image, if you will, just like Dell or Gateway Acer, they used to do. And that's what I just did for my daughter and my son. So when she went off to school, she could at least... If she lost all
her
homework,
she took that as a safety device. Yeah.
She could restore her computer back to factory settings after I already customized it.
So basically, to answer your question, Greg, you should be, when you say back up my machine, Vista should be taking the whole shoot and match all the files that are under documents and settings.
Right. One quick way, as Cal always says, is to, if you really want to know, try to do a restore and restore to an alternate location.
Exactly. Because a backup you can't restore is not a backup.
That's a very good
point. So test it.
Point.
And then always do the...
Can I upgrade to 7 from Vista Home Premium?
Yeah.
I thought Vista was the only operating system you could do.
Yeah, I think that's the only one you could
upgrade from.
It's
been almost 2 years now.
Ooh.
Without erasing everything? I'll have to look that up.
Well, let's dig in. Let us dig into that, okay? Matter of fact, you might put that question into the forum so we can see if we can get some answers for you on that, all right?
Okay.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Let's see if we can take one more very quick call. Oh, hey, Meredith. How you doing?
Hi, Foster. How are you?
I'm your dad just grabbed his head. This is Cal Carson's daughter, Meredith. We gave way to you. What can we do for you, dear?
All right. What I wanted to know is I'm going to be getting into more photo editing because I'm starting to take an interest in photography.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know what software would be good to use. Should I start using Aperture, or should I go as deep as going into Photoshop?
Both of them are very robust tools to be able to use, dear. I think you should start off with something lighter, like maybe Photoshop Elements, and yeah. then once you master that, then move up either to Aperture or the full-fledged Photoshop.
Because at that point, you'll know whether you want to make the kind of investment to get up to the big tools, okay?
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you, Meredith.
Okay, and I was right. You can upgrade from Vista, but I believe it's either it's from the Ultimate or the Enterprise version.
Oh, not from the Vista Home Premium?
Well, I'm not sure. You're going to have to check with Microsoft.
We'll dig some more on that. Hey, folks, thank you so much, Cal and Ed. Thank you, Annie and Rich. Thank you as well. Folks, it's been a wonderful time with you on the Internet Advisor. Be sure to join us again our next time around. And get your questions answered. In the meantime, visit us at InternetAdvisor.net, both to pick up on the podcast and to put any questions you may have left in there as well. Have a good weekend.
You've been listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at InternetAdvisor.net.